And we just move forward with the arrows. A little bit of background. I'm going to talk about the lower Colorado River region of Arizona and California. Essentially, this is a multi-billion dollar produce industry focused on the late fall, winter, and spring. And essentially, over 95% of the produce consumed in the continental United States comes from this region during this period. But we have some challenges. This is the level of the elevation level in Lake Mead. Essentially, 100% of our industry depends on Colorado River. And the action threshold on Lake Mead is elevation of 1,075 feet. And for the past 5 years, we've been straddling this level. And there's tier one, tier two, tier three water restrictions once we hit that level. And my stakeholders will not be impacted by tier one, two, or three because they have old historical water rights. But the municipal and industrial users in Arizona would be. And they have the votes, and they can pay a lot more per acre foot of water. So naturally, my stakeholders are concerned that they have a target on their back, and indeed they do. Here's the study area. This is seven irrigation districts in the lower Colorado River Basin. The Welton Mohawk Irrigation and Drainage District is actually on the Gila River, but it uses water diverted from the Colorado River onto those lands. And the Bard Irrigation District is actually west of the river in California. But this is the area which I'll share with you data that we've been collecting and which we have studies going into the future. Now, I want to start with the fundamental questions anyone making irrigation decisions would ask themselves. The first question is, when do I irrigate? The second is, how much water do I apply? That's required depth. These two first questions actually pertain to irrigation scheduling. And the third question is a little more complex. It's, how do I operate my system to achieve the desired required depth? And in a surface irrigation scenario, that's typically a manipulation of flow, border width or length, furrow geometry, land slope, and cutoff criteria, either distance or time. And while irrigation may seem simple enough, you simply admit water into a channel, there's a lot of things going on. There's your inflow hydrograph, there's your advance rate, there's your recession rate, there's infiltration profiles. But fortuitously, irrigation is largely a physical event, and we can put math on it. And this is what we used to develop management criteria. This is essentially the truncated momentum equation. We can drop the terms for convective and local acceleration because they don't contribute anything to the flow rate in these scenarios. And we calibrate and validate these models under field conditions. We calibrate them to get inputs we don't know, such as friction. We essentially collect data, use an inverse solution technique, and get a parameter such as friction. And then we use independent data sets with the calculated friction parameters to validate, indeed, the predicted and measured outcomes. Here's a typical calibration curve. In this case, we were using irrigation advance. The pink line would represent what our model predicts, and the yellow dots would represent measured advance. And over time, we've calibrated and validated these models and have developed management criteria that our growers can use to manipulate flow and cutoff time and distance. I want to quickly define expressions of efficiency because a lot of them are thrown out there, and I want to be clear when I throw them out there myself. Often when you're talking about irrigation efficiency, you're simply talking about the quotient of ETC versus water applied. But often, this ignores beneficial uses of water that are not ET, such as climate modification or salt leaching. So there's another term that's often used, and it's irrigation efficiency beneficially used. And it's essentially water beneficially used versus water applied. Beneficial use is increasingly a contentious term because of our scarcity of water and the projections of scarcity of water. So part of my charge has been to identify and quantify non-consumptive beneficial uses. And then we have application efficiency, which is required depth versus water applied, which is simply a subset of the first expression just over an irrigation interval. And then finally, we have water use efficiency, which is yield relative to water applied. Now, here's some of the data we have. This shows irrigation efficiency and distribution uniformity as a function of bed slope. And basically, in our surface irrigation scenarios, we use zero slope. We have no runoff. All our water is impounded, and it leaches through the profile. And we get greatest efficiency by laser leveling every single year before every vegetable crop. The other thing we've done is we've manipulated furrow length. This shows application efficiency, the function of furrow length and inflow volume per furrow. And we're operating in that region of about 40 gallons per minute per furrow at 600-foot runs. Now, on some of our lighter textured soils, we could pick up greater application efficiencies by shortening the irrigation run. But then here comes trade-offs into play. You take more land out of production to put more roads and ditches, and your production per net acreage goes down. So we consider 600-foot runs a reasonable trade-off for most of our scenarios. And it works extremely well. We can achieve efficiencies as high as 95% on our typical loam and clay loam soils. When we get to sandy loams, we fall a little short. But again, there's a trade-off of losing land by cutting up fields in smaller increments. One of the reasons we can irrigate so efficiently with furrow is we use these bolas. We essentially pack our furrows into very nice tight trapezoids, and we can admit water in those, and we can move across these channels fairly quick. Here shows some data, actually, that we can collect based on our model. This is some data I published some time ago. And you can look at application efficiency, the first graph, distribution uniformity, the second. And you can see with about 35 gallons per minute per furrow and a cutoff time of about 70 minutes, we're getting efficiencies approaching 95% and distribution uniformities approaching 95%. You have to trade off between the two, because at the inlet end of an irrigation field, you have more infiltration because of opportunity time and less downstream. So the faster you can move the water across, the less you have these large infiltration profiles at the inlet end, and you can enhance your distribution efficiency. Now, the other thing is sprinkler irrigation. We usually use sprinklers to establish crops, but some of the large bed, the 80, 84-inch bed leafies, we sprinkle throughout the season. So one of our objectives has been to develop models for the sprinkler irrigation scenario to use them more efficiently. And again, there's a lot of things going on, but again, we can put mathematical equations on it. Essentially, the models, this is one I published about 7 years ago, although we've published a gradient vector approach more recently. Essentially, we solve all the mass and energy balance equations in a manifold, and we can optimize performance of these solid set sprinkler systems that we move in and out of fields all the time. And again, we got to calibrate and validate our models. We don't know the friction offhand of aluminum pipe. There's some in the textbooks, but it's usually not correct. So we set out test plots. We put catch cans. We put meters and pressure gauges throughout a manifold system, and we can calibrate and validate our models. This shows some of the validations. This is the pressure head gradient, and you can see the dots are measured data and the lines are model predicted data. I just want to make one note. The solid set sprinklers we use are incredibly efficient. In fact, they're over-engineered. They're over-engineered by about 40%. I don't say that as a bad thing. I would take a great solace if I knew the Army Corps of over-engineering dams by 40%. But these are just incredible systems. At the sprinkler closest to the pump, if we set the pressure at 80, it's 80. And the sprinkler way down at the far corner of the field, a 40-acre, 80-acre field, is 79, 78. So they're very well-engineered systems. Here's some historical water use records for our districts. And you can see going back to 1970. I have to explain what happened here. In 1974, the Wealth and Mohawk Irrigation and Drainage District uses Colorado River water, but they run drainage wells to pump out the saline shallow groundwater, and they were pumping it into the Gila River, which flowed into the Colorado River, which was compromising land in Mexico. So President Portillo and Richard Nixon negotiated the Salinity Control Act in 1974, and part of that was incentivizing increased efficiencies in Wealth and Mohawk, but they also took land out of production. So you can see in 1974, water deliveries in this region dropped quite substantially. And then what happened right on the heel of that is the produce industry expanded dramatically. Lettuce acreage doubled, and then doubled the next year, and broccoli doubled, and doubled the next year. So you can see water use goes up. Now then, in the late 80s, the growers began to implement irrigation efficiencies. Now, I got to be honest with you, their motive was not some holistic water-sharing ideology. We made the observation that we could mitigate diseases by irrigating better. We reduced sclerotinia, erwinia, fusarium. So irrigation efficiencies improved dramatically through the late 90s to 2000. So you can see the water delivered per acre feet and the total water delivered. And you can see we're at one of the lowest points ever. We've gone up a little, 80, because again, produce acreage has expanded. In fact, five of these seven irrigation districts are 100% in produce. The Weltemoak being the exception, they still have a lot of forages because there's an animal husbandry industry in the Weltemoak Irrigation and Drainage District. I talked about another expression of efficiency, of yield or production versus water use. And you can see from the 70s to 2000, we've almost, this is head lettuce as an example, but I could show you similar data for the brassicas and spinach. You can see we've almost doubled production per unit of water over this period. So we have made gains. But as I said, non-consumptive beneficial use is a contentious term. So we have to talk about what these uses are. Are we doing them well? Can we do them better? And I'd like to mention three in particular. One is what we call the summer flat water. The land in the summer is grown while spring wheat or summer Sudan grass, and they come off, they take that crop off, and before the produce goes back in, they usually do a pre-irrigation in a basin. And there's three reasons for that. One is for salt leaching going into the produce. The other is to facilitate the residue decomposition, be it the wheat straw, the Sudan stubble. And the other is to get the soil moisture at the exact optimum till for land prep. The other one where we apply water, theoretically beyond consumptive use, but you can see this that's probably not going to be the case. I'll show you some data, is stand establishment. And one of the main objectives there is climate modification. We got to circumvent thermal dormancy and other issues that may impede stand establishment. And, of course, we'd like to pick up some leaching fraction for salt management if we can. And finally, the last inefficient irrigation would be the thinning irrigation. We haven't went in with those packing wheels yet and made the trapezoids. We have furrows like this. We want to get the optimum soil moisture so that the thinning crews, being manual labor crews or thinning machines, go through and just knock out the plants that we don't want without grabbing clods and destroying our stand. So that these are three key non-consumptive beneficial uses that we have and we need to quantify. Now I want to talk about stand establishment. Many years ago, they used to establish stands just by running furrow water in the furrows for days, like 7 days, 10 days, till they got a stand. We call that subbing. Subbing used about 30 inches of water just for stand establishment. We began to switch to sprinklers. Essentially 100% of the industry is now sprinklers. We went to sprinklers for climate modification. We could capitalize on some evaporative cooling and circumvent thermal dormancy in many cases. But we picked up a huge efficiency here. We used to use about 30 inches of water in subbing operations, and we can establish a stand by sprinklers with less than 9 inches of water. So this has been one of the reasons we see the... Here's some data that we did. Here's stand establishment. Here's some stand establishment dates. And you can see the water received on sprinklers. And you can see the air temperature. Again, climate modification. We lower the temperature in the canopy about 7 degrees Celsius. This shows the water. The dark blue lines on the bottom would be when the sprinklers are on. And you can see it takes almost 48 hours. They run them 48 hours at first just to refill the soil profile. And then thereafter, they just wet the surface during the hot part of the day to circumvent thermal dormancy. This shows the vapor pressure deficit and the evaporation. You can see we're almost getting 30% evaporation. This is important because we're also getting water hitting the surface that's 30% more saline. And that is an important management consideration. Here's the bulk conductance. I'm out of time. okay, here's all my thing. I got carried away, I guess. Now we're beginning to study the whole cropping system because we're not getting the leaching, required leaching during the produce cropping season. And you can see how we're picking up much of our leaching fraction during some of the alternative crops. But in some cases, we're not even doing that. The first bar would be pre-irrigation. The second bar would be right before the lettuce crop. The third bar would be the lettuce crop at different depths. And you can see that's a salt loading, net salt loading event. But in this one particular case, even the wheat was a salt loading event. So what we're doing now is essentially we're generating better ET data. This coming season, I have deployed 8 eddy covariant systems and different cropping systems, 2 large aperture scintillometers, and we're measuring ET and salinity at multiple scales. We have collaboration with NASA and with the French-Israeli satellite VENUS, which means Vegetative Environmental New Satellite Systems. And that tile shows the images they're sending us every 2 days from the VENUS mission. Sentinel 2A, 2B, we get images twice a week. Essentially, we're scaling up salt. So to summarize everything, irrigation efficiencies for vegetable crops produced in the region exceed 90%. They approach 95%. Required leaching for salt management is not being achieved during the produce cycle. Due diligence will be required to avoid salinity issues as we seek strategies to transfer water from the agriculture to the urban sectors. And one of my charges over the next 3 years is essentially develop user-friendly tools to track ET and salinity for the complex multi-cropping systems in the region.
Thank you.